As we dealt with the husband-wife relationship, I begin today will be dedicated both at this hour and the worship hour and the two sessions tonight will be dedicated to the parent-child relationship. And these are, if you want a label for this, I call it Secrets and Skills in the Art of Being a Parent. And as I said Friday night, I got into this because I realized when my wife and I began to have our children, and for those of you who might be here for the first time, I have four children. You might wonder if somebody teaches this stuff really has kids. I'm not through raising them yet. I've pretty well finished with two of them, my girls. My oldest girl got married last June. She's a wonderful young man. And my second daughter is a junior in college, at our college. She's got a fellow on the line who's a real prince of a guy, and I'm real optimistic. My oldest boy was called home this morning. He's a fine young man, I think, and my second son is 13. So I've had three teenagers, either two teenagers or three teenagers at the same time for the last few years. You know what a teenager is, don't you? It's God's plan for bankruptcy. It's a, I got into this because I realized that we need to learn the art of being parents, just like we need to learn the art of being husbands and wives. There are certain secrets and skills. We start with the scriptures. I'm going to read for you Colossians 3, 18 through 21. Wives, be subject to your husbands as is fitting in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. A great deal to say about that. But look at verses 20 and 21, sort of our theme verses for the day. Children, be obedient to your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing to the Lord. Fathers, do not exasperate your children that they may not lose heart. Children, be obedient to your parents in all things. We'll talk about that this hour. We're going to talk about the very hard subject of discipline. I would point out just going in that this commandment that children are to obey their parents is a commandment of the from God, and it says, obey your parents that you may be well-pleasing to the Lord. You know, who's going to teach our children to live in such a way that they don't sin against God? Disobedient children are disobedient to God, not just to their parents. Disobedient children are not well-pleasing to God. And we talk about the basic fundamental biblical principles that we introduced earlier on, the principle of hierarchy. I taught us, I think, I hope, that God has given us authority, the head of the house authority, that in order that we not that we would lord it over everyone, but that we would be able to fulfill our responsibility. Well, what is our responsibility in this regard? We think about the responsibility of the steward, the principle of stewardship. Our children belong to God first. They're His kids. We raise them for Him. Well, if we put these two together and look at this verse, it tells me very clearly that I am responsible to God to teach my kids to be obedient so that they will please Him. And who will do this teaching if I do not? Who is responsible for this? You see, that is, it's not an option. Children, disobedient children, I'm trying to say and not saying it very well, are not simply disobedient to their parents, they're disobedient to God. And one of the things we need to teach our children early on is that their responsibility to obey their parents is a responsibility that they have to God. Now, frankly, I don't mean to be unkind in this, but I'm going to say this, and I hope you'll forgive me if you take offense. But the thing of child raising today in our society, in our culture, is dominated by weak-mindedness, sentimentality. I tell you, I have seen otherwise intelligent people, strong people able to make a living, professional people, people make important decisions in the corporate world. People who get by very well, they don't dribble their oatmeal down their shirt. They pay their bills and qualify for a driver's license and live very fine lives until they have kids, and they turn into slobbering idiots. They get overwhelmed by sentimental nonsense. These little darlings, you know, that show up in the house and look so cute, aren't they precious? And people I see strong-minded people, intelligent people, suddenly become weak-minded when confronted with a child. And it's I don't mean that, well, anyway, that's That's very true. Now, my basic principle in raising kids is this. And I'm repeating this, and this is my starting place. And here, this is my contribution to the science of child raising. It's this: raise your kids so you can like them. Raise your kids so you can like them. If you like them, chances are other adults will like them. Do you realize one of the greatest gifts you can give to your children is to raise them so other adults like them? If you want to make your life hard for your kid, a lot of parents, they love their kids so much that they cannot discipline them. But what they're doing is, they're showing very little love. It is weak-minded because what they're, by raising what I call obnoxious little snots, and obnoxious little snots grow up to be obnoxious big snots. You ever notice that? Age does not improve snothood. Or snottiness, whatever. And life is hard for obnoxious snots. You raise a kid so that other adults don't like them, teachers don't like them, employers don't like them, you have made life miserable for your child. And what I tell the parents is, if you don't raise your kids to mind, I hope you have a lot of money to leave them. Either raise them to be self-disciplined, and the purpose of discipline, you see, is not punishment. The purpose of discipline is self-discipline. If you raise undisciplined children, you better leave them a lot of money. Because they're going to have a hard time earning a living. They're going to have a hard time getting an education. We graduate less than half the students at Florida Christian College. Less than half the freshmen who come in September are there in June. You know why? Because they're not capable of college work? No. Because they didn't want to be there? No, they wanted to be there. Most of them, you understand? Most of them wanted to be there. They wanted to complete the program. They were capable of college work. But they had so little self-discipline that they could not make themselves do what had to be done to accomplish their real goals. And they simply don't, they can't get their reading done, they can't get their papers written, and they flunk out and they hate themselves, they're disappointed. Often they come back after they grow up a couple of years and do make it, and the simple reason that nobody taught them discipline. The purpose of discipline, I teach, is self-discipline. You see, if we're going to make it in life, we have to do what has to be done when it has to be done, whether it's easy at the moment or not. And we can either learn that the easy way or learn it the hard way, or if you don't learn it at all, maybe you can inherit a lot of money. Now, and so the purpose of discipline is self-discipline. And we raised our kids so we can like them. Let me just give you a word of personal testimony. If other adults like your kids, you open up a whole new world to them. They can get jobs. My second boy, when he was 9 years old, twice, my oldest boy did it too, once, some of our neighbors, they had a babysitting industry. Neighbors would have them, they would let them babysit. My second son, for instance, spent one weekend at a luxury hotel. Family took him with him. So when they went to their banquets, they could watch the kids. And he had a weekend in a luxury hotel. The next door was Burt Reynolds. And the next door down was Governor Graham of the state of Florida. And he spent the weekend with Burt Reynolds and Governor Graham and a lot of famous people at a luxury hotel. And his only job was when they went to the banquet at night that he had to watch the kids in the hotel room. He was 9 years old. And they trusted him. Understand that? You open worlds. You know my oldest son was in the hospital about a year ago. And he has asthma and some other problems. And gave him a valuable collector's item designer, a collector's item knife, limited edition knife as a keepsake out of respect and friendship. And this man is one of our elders in our church, one of the greatest men I've ever met. He's one of the most decorated heroes of World War II. And he has the French Medal of Honor. Well, you'd take hours to talk about his medals. He was an ace in World War II and Korean War. He's flown. He was the first to fly many of the fighter planes that, as they were developed. He was shot down in Korea, and he and some other men broke out of prison camp. And then he's a PhD, a graduate. He's a retired engineer, project engineer from General Motors. He's one of the most amazing men I've ever met. He's also the surrogate grandparent for my children. And he's the resident grandparent for my children. And He's one of my son's best friends. Let me tell you, a man like that doesn't like just any kid. You know, I think one of the greatest honors for my sons are that this man's name is Paul Johnson. And one of the greatest honors, and I tell my boys this, you're greatly honored because he likes you. You got that? I'm trying to say, kids get by in school. They make their grades easier if the teachers like them. What do parents like about kids? Kids who are polite and obedient and intelligent, who can carry on a conversation and not act like a jerk. Kids who keep their word, who can be depended upon, who are trustworthy. Just basic straight life, you understand? Raise your kids so you can like them. If you don't like them, tell you what will happen. When you get older, you'll use babysitters too much. Here a while back, I took my wife out to dinner, and the next table there was a family. There was four adults and one child. I think it was a set of parents, a set of grandparents, and one four-year-old girl. And all four of those grandparents spent the whole evening trying to keep that girl in her chair. I almost volunteered to help. I thumped her on the head once, that'd have done it. And let me tell you, the great tragedy was, I'd bet my house, the next time they went out, the kid was the babysitter. The kid stayed home. Now, there's times to get a babysitter, you know. We use babysitters some. But kids who are obnoxious get left home a lot. Kids who are obnoxious end up in daycare centers a lot. Kids who are obnoxious get sent away. Why? Because nobody likes an obnoxious little snot, even if it's yours. Raise your kids so you can like them. Other people will like them. You'll make life easy for them. Easier. You open doors to them. I'm very serious about that. Now, the purpose of discipline is self-discipline. That is, children who have enough self-discipline to do what they really want to do. The home is a benevolent dictatorship. As I say, I'm in charge. I'm responsible. Now, and the biblical concept of authority is the concept of absolute authority. See, there are two kinds of authority. There is delegated authority and absolute authority or intrinsic authority. I explain what I mean. You see, our government, the authority of our government is a delegated authority. That is, Mr. Reagan is in office because we elected him. We chose him as a nation, therefore he has authority. Now, God has authority, but we didn't elect him. Jesus is the head of the church. We didn't have a vote. You understand? God gave him. The Bible says that every knee should bow before him because God hath exalted him, and God has given him a name above every name. It's intrinsic authority. So, and as this boils down to child raising, you see, a lot of children are raised with the modern idea, and they're taught this, a lot of modern psychology teaches, that the home should be a democracy, you know? Everybody should have a vote. And children are raised with the concept that they have no ultimate responsibility to obey any rule that, number one, they didn't help make, or number two, they don't agree with. You know, children should help make the rules because then they'll keep them. Oh? And one of the reasons why our schools are in chaos in America, public schools, is that the average first grade class, when those kids walk in, on the average school in America, over half those kids were raised on the concept of delegated authority. That is, they have been taught that they have no real responsibility to obey the teacher if they don't agree with the teacher or didn't help make the rule. You understand that? Delegated authority. We had this at the college. I recall we kicked a student out one time, and the student simply would not obey the rules. Nice kid, just could not keep the curfew and the other rules. Fine. I was on the committee that year, and we talked to the student. I said, did you understand the rules? Oh, yes. Well, why don't you keep the rules? Well, but you misunderstood. She said, you don't understand. I don't agree with those rules. And I said, I was spokesman for the committee. I said, well, that's okay, but you misunderstand that. That doesn't matter whether you agree or not. It's our school. In our rules. But that student never understood that. And the student ended up leaving. Nice kid. But you understand? Been raised to believe. Didn't obey any rule. Didn't agree with. Nothing binding. And the experts say this, you know, you should never make a child obey anything they don't understand. My response to that is baloney. That's spelled B-A-L-O-N-E-Y in the vernacular. If you're an academic like me, it's B-O-L-O-G-N-A. And either translation, it comes out the same. Listen, if you wait till your kids are old enough to understand the rules before you before they have to obey them, you're going to be 3 years behind starting in. You're going to spend your whole life playing catch-up ball, and you never catch up. See, the rule at our house is, why do I have to obey you, Father? Ready? Why do you have to do what Daddy says? The answer is, because I'm Daddy and you're not. And should we explain to our children our reasons? We most certainly should. We explain them when they're old enough to understand, if we choose to explain. But we must teach our children. I teach my kids that there is, that they obey me because I am the Father. I'm their Daddy. I'm Daddy and you're not. That's why you obey me. There is no connection between my explanation of my rules and their obedience to those rules. I explain them if I choose to, but if I don't want to explain, I don't. Why? Because they understand. Why do I have to do it? Well, because that you have to. We call it the system. And we taught our kids on the way home from the hospital. bringing this little baby home from the hospital. Now, kid, won't you understand how the system works? I'm Daddy and you're not. You understand that? No. Well, we don't start that early, but we get down to it right on. And listen to me. This is called the biblical principle of the hierarchy, and this makes perfect sense to children. Children understand this perfectly. What a child does not understand is their having authority. You see, I grew up, everybody in the community knew and I grew up in the farming community, and the fathers were in charge of the house. They had the absolute authority. My dad told me when I went to school, he said, that teacher, that's their turf. You do what the teacher says, that teacher is just like me. And we had a rule, and most of my friends had this rule. We either got no spankings or we got two. You know, if you got one in school, you got one when you got home. Why? Because that teacher has represents me. And I could explain to my father, that teacher misunderstood me, it wasn't fair. And my dad would have wept all the way to the woodhouse. I mean, he didn't care. He said, look, you do what the teacher says. I've seen an old maid school teacher, 60 years old, control 45 farm boys who were getting rambunctious by just suggesting, well, if you guys aren't going to cooperate, I'm just going to tell your fathers. I mean, there was order in that school for 4.5 months. Just one statement. You understand? Because she could run that class, had absolute authority, no problem, because she had the fathers behind her. And she knew it. All she had to do was just suggest that. And my daddy whipped me and half the other class. My dad never asked my permission to be my father. He just figured he was dad, and that's the way it was. And my dad taught me many valuable lessons. My dad got through raising me. I wasn't afraid of anybody. I wasn't afraid to work. And I knew how to do what I was told. He just sort of assumed that he was daddy and I wasn't. And there were worse things to learn. Well, then in the 60s, the wives took over the homes. I don't mean to be in America. Most homes in America are run by the women now. Except that in the 70s, the kids took over. I've been in homes, and I'm not making this up, in homes of Christian people that are run by six-year-old kids. Whether the family does anything or not depends on how Junior feels about it. I've seen the same kid put to bed 8 times. That's a world's record. I'll go in the Guinness's book. The kids go. When does a child go to bed? When he wants to. He eats what he wants to, does what he wants to. Children, parents run in absolute terror of their children. And the kids, small children, are running the homes of America. And let me tell you something. They don't want to. They don't like that arrangement. That does not make any sense to them. Because what they lose is the very important thing called security. And we get kids at the college who've been running their homes, and then they try to run the school. Then they run into Doc Smith and me and a couple other fellows, and we have a real brouhaha. And sometimes they get the message and sometimes they don't. Now, discipline. Let me tell you why every child challenges the discipline of the authority of their parents. Okay? Tell you what's going on. And if you understand this, I think it will give us some real insights in the necessity of discipline. Now, by the way, the next hour I'm going to talk about the other side of this. The balance of strong discipline, absolute authority, is expressed love. So I'm just giving you the first half this hour. We'll get the second half the next hour. Why is it that every child challenges the authority of the parent? Now, every child does it from one extreme to the other. There is the classic strong-willed child. You know what a strong-willed child is? God was perhaps preparing me to do this kind of thing, because my first child, my daughter Leanne, is a strong-willed child. I mean, the textbook was written about her. Strong-willed. I mean, we'd say to her, don't touch that. This is a little child. Just out of diapers, or still in diapers. You ever have a kid, you spank her, you know, and she'll look you in the eye and put you, you know, gonna... You ever have a kid do this? Look you right in the eye, you know, and you're going to touch it again. Pretty soon you couldn't put a piece of paper in between her finger and what she was told not to touch. Then she'll go... And you spank her again, and she comes back. You ever have a kid do that? Yeah. I have spanked her 5 times in a row. Get to feeling like a child abuser after a while, you know. You could, some people give up, which is bad. I'll tell you why in a minute. I mean, just challenge you. Ever so often, just look you right in the eye and say, in effect, I'm not going to do it. Let's see if you can make me. On the other hand, you had the other opposite is the compliant child. My oldest son, my first boy, was a compliant child. Just exactly the opposite. Born that way. I say to Aaron, if I told him not to, I'd say, Aaron, don't touch that. I mean, he'd go in the next room, stay there for a week. I mean, if I offended you, he could write a book on how to repent. I mean, I'd just point at that little boy, and he'd melt. Oh, if I displeased you. I just solved that issue for years. He'd just never touch anything. And I thought, man, there's nothing to raising boys. I got this thing down pat. All you got to do is point at him. And then came Adam. God's first and my last. Whereas I had pointed at Aaron and Aaron would melt, I pointed at Adam and he froze. He'd give me the shoulder. You ever see a kid do this? Adam, don't touch that. Put that shoulder down. You know, he'd give you a... See, what he was doing was cussing me. He just hadn't learned the words yet. Listen, my little Adam, he wasn't as strong-willed as my oldest daughter, but it took us about 3 months for Adam, and Adam was still in diapers. You got to start early. He was still in diapers. It took us 3 months to figure out who the head of the house was and who wasn't. And once he got that settled, he's fine. Adam's a fine fellow. He's still strong. He was always strong-minded. You know, he has a hard time obeying, not because he's rebellious, but because he couldn't find the off button. Every kid, you know, he's doing something, you tell him to stop it, and he means to stop it. He just can't. He's got momentum. You know, you can't turn the corner. Strong will. And so I've had a strong-willed child. I mean, and by the way, a lot of strong-willed children end up in prison. And I had a compliant child and two somewhere in between. And you can't raise all kids the same. Can't do it. Let me tell you about strong-willed children. If you've got a strong-willed child, let me encourage you and discourage you. As I said, a lot of strong-willed children end up in prison. A strong-willed child is like a high-powered rifle. It just depends on which way you aim it. And what you have to do with the strong-willed child, what we have to do with every child, is to break their will without breaking their spirit. I'll teach you how to do that. One of my wife's sisters has a strong-willed child, a boy. His kid's okay, except his father was a wimp, and his mother didn't have a great deal of sense, frankly. And they always kept changing the subject. They read the books on how to raise kids. You see, Spock said, if you get a child who's got something not supposed to have, you trade him. You get a toy and say, here, you give me that, and I'll give you this. Or if they throw a tantrum, you put them in a room and by themselves, close the door, and say, well, you know, you work that out on your own, which is wrong. It's not what you do. See, they're trying to get something settled, and you keep changing the subject on them. Well, his parents kept changing the subject, and the kid never had any. He just ran wild. And if he'd been caught, he would have ended up in prison. If he'd been caught, I'm serious. He'd end up in prison if he hadn't been caught. When he was 15 years old, he was beating up on his mother, and he asked his parents to put him in an institution so he could learn to control himself. You understand? He asked his parents to do that. He was basically a nice kid. When he wasn't stupid, he knew what was going on. And all of his life, he was begging for somebody to head him off. Finally, he just came out and asked them. And they did. They put him in an institution. And he was there for about a year. And he learned more self-control. But he had to do it himself. My daughter's a strong-willed child. It's a strange, it's almost weird. I mean, she sets her, a strong-willed child sets their mind to do something. You might as well just get out of the way. She's going to do it, whether it's bad or good. And she was the super achiever of the family. I mean, you name it, she was the achiever. National Honor Society, Girls State, Girls Nation. She met President Carter. She was cheerleader, ensemble. She ended up running the, everything she gets into, she ends up running it. She was a Orange County, second runner-up in Orange County Miss America pageant. She was Orange County Junior Miss, but all over the country. First quarter at the college, she made the best grades in the freshman class because she was determined to do it and didn't make it sense. But not, for the rest of the 4 years, she never made the best grades in the class. She didn't want to make the best grades. She just wanted to prove she could do it. You know, she's going to do it. Once she did it, she's on to something else. Strange mentality. And she got thank God, she married a Marine Corps officer. It's exactly what she needed. He flies jet planes, lands them on carriers. That's what it takes to get in control of her. And she's crazy about him. He's a great fella, great Christian. And but she's at it again. She's up here married a year. She's took a youth group of 2 kids, and now it's a youth group of 15 kids. She's working with the Bible College, helping with their summer teams. She's made a movie, got a modeling contract, and sings professionally and teaches school. I mean, just it's amazing just to watch them. We just sit back and, you know, just don't get trying to get stepped on. You know, see what I'm saying? Kids end up in prison, or they become great achievers if they're these strong-willed children. Depends on how you aim them. So we ought not to be afraid of strong-willed children, but they take a lot of raising. You understand? The Angel took a lot of raising. Well, but whether a child is a strong-willed child or a compliant child, I'm going to tell you why they test. I'm going to give you by analogy, teach you why every child tests the authority of the parent and what's going on. And let me teach you a theory this way. Suppose you found yourself in some kind of science fiction world. You find yourself suddenly plopped down on a strange planet. You didn't know where you were. But you knew one thing. You were the smallest, weakest thing on that planet. And all around you was a forest or a jungle, and it was full of, there were sounds coming out of it. You don't know what the sounds were. You see moving objects. You don't know what they are. They're all bigger than you are. You don't know if they hurt you or if they're dangerous to you or not, but because you don't know, you're afraid. See, that's what a child is. A child is plopped down in the world, and they're the smallest, weakest thing in it. And they see things, and they hear things, and they don't know whether to be afraid or not, and what they need is security. Fortunately, in my analogy in this world, around you're in the middle of a clearing, and there's this jungle, but there's a fence around you. Boy, you're glad. Because that fence keeps whatever is out there. The fence is your security. What would you do ever so often? Well, my question is vague, so I'll answer it myself. What you do is ever so often, depending on how scared you were, you'd check the fence. Why? Because that fence is what is your security. And when a child challenges your authority, that's what he's doing. He's checking the fence. And the issue is this. Are you tough enough to protect me? Are you tough enough for me to trust? That is the issue in authority. And when a child challenges the authority of the parent, that's what's going on. Are you tough enough for me to trust? Suppose you did walk up to the fence one day and you pushed on the thing, just fell over. Here you are, the weakest, smallest thing in this world, and this fence, which is supposed to protect you, you can push it over. If you can push it over, whatever is out there can push it over. And you see, the fence doesn't have to fall down every time you push. It just has to fall down once. And that's why children who check the authority are children who challenge the authority. The child says, in effect, I'm not going to do what you tell me. Let's see you make me. They're saying, I'm scared. I want to know if you're tough enough for me to trust. And if the fence keeps falling down, they'll keep pushing and pushing and pushing, hoping for it sometime to stand. And if it keeps falling down, they lose their security. And it's very bad. Does that make sense to you? Now that's what's going on. And so we owe it to our kids. I'm one of the things about my wife. She is one of the toughest people I've ever met. You talk about motherhood is often pictured as being frilly and pink and lacy. You see these Mother's Day cards. Listen, if they made Mother's Day cards that represented motherhood, they'd be made out of leather with iron studs. I mean, if you want to get tromped on, you get between a real mother and some mothering she's got to do, and I promise you, you'll get walked on. Motherhood has to be the toughest thing in the world. My wife's tough. Her policy was, look, those are my knickknacks. I got here first. You leave them alone. I'm the mother. You do what I say. And one of the reasons LeAngela turned out so well, I think, is that she lost every battle with her mother. Now, see, this is why we must not permit uncontrolled behavior. What is uncontrolled behavior? Tantrums are uncontrolled behavior. Kids throw tantrums. We had a rule at our house. Every kid gets one tantrum per life. And then I throw a big one. Only one can throw a tantrum in our house is me, and I know how. No, we do not allow pouting. Pouting is uncontrolled behavior. When a kid is pouting, he's cussing you. He just doesn't know the words yet. When he learns them, he'll use them. Pouting, mad, you know what mad crying is? When a kid is crying, not because he's hurt, it's because he's mad. He's letting you have it. They work at it. You can always tell a mad cry from a kid. They're working at it. They work it up. And you can stop it. There's all kinds of ways. But listen, children are challenging you to battles that they want to lose. And they're glad when they lose because everything's okay. The fence stands. No uncontrolled behavior. You know, some kids do what they're told the fifth time they're told. You ever notice that? They learn that's the time that counts. Why? Well, that tone of voice, and mother's a certain shade of red. And then, I better obey now. Why? This is the one that counts. Let me tell you, a child who can learn to do what they're told the fifth time can learn to do it the first time. If that's what counts. They learn. You see, kids are, whatever we permit, we teach. Kids are what we've taught them to be. And let me tell you, children who are disciplined, not just punished, but disciplined, they have lives that are filled with order, and they're glad about it. Listen, children who are raised to do what they're told, to be disciplined, cannot stand to be around kids who are not raised to be disciplined. They cannot stand to be around them. And kids pick up on this. Do you know that my older son, he did some babysitting for a family when he was doing that more. And do you know, this time he had two little boys. And do you know that those little boys would obey my son better than they would obey their own parents? In fact, they used to have my son babysit for them simply because the kids were getting out of control. My wife has babysat for a nephew who would obey her better than he would obey his own mother. Kids instantly know. They pick it up on it. They know what the rules are. They're smart. Kids are very smart. And listen to me, kids will naturally gravitate towards someone who will lovingly discipline them. Do you know that? If they have a choice, little kids, they will choose the adult. Whether it's a parent or not, they will choose the adult who loves them enough and takes them seriously enough to discipline them. They'll prefer to be with them. Which teachers did you like best in school? The teachers who let you get away with anything, or the teachers who required you to measure up and accomplish things? Which teacher did you like the best? I'll tell you, the teacher, we have every high school has teachers who want to be popular, who want to be one of the kids. The kids get away with murder, and they hold those teachers in contempt. The favorite teachers are the teachers who say, look, you measure up, and you do what's expected of you, and you get the job done. And that's who the kids love. And so if you're not going to discipline your kids, be prepared to lose them. If you don't discipline your kids, they will hold you in contempt, and they will seek out other adults who will put some order in their lives. I'm very serious about that. I don't mean to be unkind. Children pick up on this, and we must be consistent. Well, our time is about up. Is there any questions on this? Do you understand the principle of what's going on in discipline? Children are looking for order and security. Now, I'm going to make one statement, which is going to be the bridge into what I'm going to say next hour. And it's this, that one of the primary functions of good discipline, strong discipline, is that discipline makes room for love. The choice is not between love and discipline, because, hear me, without discipline, you have no love. And I'll tell you why next hour. Is our time up? Yes.